Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. And this is a study of British politicians who cross the floor. That's to say, go from one political party to another. Because the House of Commons is based on some chapel that it was originally held in, which is why there's the aisle down the middle. Some of us say the layout makes it too oppositional, it's them and us. Things like Holyrood is a hemicycle, so that people realise they're not completely diametrically opposed to each other. Likewise, the European Parliament. Likewise, Doyle Aaron is like that. Maybe more sensible. Okay, the London Assembly, other legislatures. But let's go back to this. So many examples over the past two centuries of people who've changed party. Remember, the parties didn't even officially exist till, say, the Tamworth Manifesto, and then they actually had manifestos for the first time. And actually getting membership lists and people paying their dues. And then you know officially which party existed. There was these things were completely informal to the 19th century. But Sir Robert Peel had been a Tory, and obviously Tories changed the Conservative Party. Is that changing party? I wouldn't say so. But so someone like Gladstone, William Ewart Gladstone, and as famously said to be the rising hope of the stern, unbending Tories. And the other day I found out where that comes from. Sir John McIntosh wrote a foreword to one of Gladstone's essays, and that's where the description comes from. So he was a dyed-in-the-wool Tory, an ultra against Catholic emancipation, but then over a repeal of the Corn Laws, he followed his master, Sir Robert Peel. About a third of the Tories who defected to become Peelites. The Peelites were a distinct party for a while, and Lord Aberdeen was the only ever Peelite prime minister. Anyway, the Peelites and the Whigs merged to form the Liberal Party. So in a sense, he was in three parties. Or look at Joseph Chamberlain, Radical Joe Chamberlain, who was Lord Mayor of Birmingham, even though he's actually a born Londoner, a Member of Parliament, and he was a Liberal. But anyway, and then he split from the Liberals over Irish Home Rule, became a Liberal Unionist, and he did indeed get a cabinet position. So, and of course, he was the father of two Conservative leaders, Austen Chamberlain and the younger half-brother, Neville Chamberlain. Austen Chamberlain being the first Tory leader not to become Prime Minister until William Hague. And Neville Chamberlain, well, least said the best, although I think it wasn't too bad. And they obviously both started out as Liberal Unionists, but gradually, by the First World War, the Liberal Unionists were officially absorbed into the Conservative Party. People sometimes said Unionist to mean either Conservative or Liberal Unionist. And so it goes on. So I suppose Neville Chamberlain maybe ended well. And famously Churchill. So look at him as a young army officer in India, reading up on politics. He decided that he was a Liberal. But he had excellent Conservative credentials because of his family, his father being Chancellor of the Exchequer, might have become Prime Minister had he not died of syphilis age 45. And his father was completely cynical. That's why he decided to exploit the Irish Home Rule issue and said, the orange card will be the one to play. Please God, it'll be the ace and not the two. And flirted with the idea of going the other way. History may have been very different had he embraced Home Rule for Ireland. But Churchill decided to exploit the family connections to the max and was a Conservative MP. That's how he was elected for Oldham, age 24, but crossed the floor in 1904 to the Liberals. And partly because he saw that's the way the tide was going, in that supposition was correct, with the Conservatives sustaining a terrible defeat in 1906, reduced to 130 MPs, even worse these days. But then after the First World War, he left the Liberals and was a constitutionalist and is an independent for Westminster, as in actually the city of Westminster, not just Parliament, and then rejoined the Conservatives in 1924, which is why a lot of Conservatives in the 1930s didn't trust him, including over appeasement, saying he's just a glory boy, he'll just say anything, do anything. And he simply perceived the parties as a vehicle for the advancement of great personalities like himself. Going on to James Ramsay MacDonald, one of the founding members of Labour, the first ever Labour Prime Minister. But then over that budget in 1931, because of the Great Depression, he split from Labour to form National Labour. Only a dozen MPs founded him, and he was Prime Minister of the National Government, a mostly Conservative government led by a Labour Prime Minister. 90% of his MPs were Conservatives. And he was seen as an absolute Judas in the Labour Party for many years. Look at Sir Oswald Mosley. Elected to Parliament as a Conservative for Harrow in 1918 and turned his coat, became Labour in 1922, and he was Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster in the Labour cabinet of Ramsay MacDonald, split to become an independent, established the British Union of Fascists. Later has changed his name to the British Union of Fascists and National Socialists, but he was never got any MPs elected, but that was the end of him. Or look at Shirley Williams. I heard her speak once, addressed the Oxford Union, daughter of Vera Brittain, the woman who wrote Testament of Youth about First World War and all the rest of it. So Shirley Williams, she was a Labour MP, Education Secretary and so on. And she's one of the Gang of Four who in March 1981 gave their Limehouse Declaration. Limehouse, because that's where Attlee and others had helped found the Labour Party, saying that Labour was no longer advancing the interests of the British people. They found the Social Democratic Party, her, Roy Jenkins, Bill Rogers, and, my goodness, David Owen. And none of those ever served in high office again. Though certainly, Lowen was, they were all ennobled, actually. And I've even read the autobiography of Bill Rogers, fourth among equals, being the least well-known of the Gang of Four Labour MPs. But Roy Jenkins was a big hitter, absolutely evil, mass-murdering bastard, but had been Chancellor Exchequer, Home Secretary. Lord Owen being the youngest Foreign Secretary for a very long time. Bill Rogers not as well known. And then about 23 Labour MPs followed them, a tenth of the Labour parliamentary party and one Conservative. They never got anywhere. Lord Altrincham, this unsuccessful Conservative parliamentary candidate, a very liberal Conservative who'd openly criticised the Queen in 1953, been punched in the face for it, anti-apartheid and so on. He defected the SDP, never got elected. Now, who else turned his coat? Reg Prentice was a Labour MP who became a Conservative and he was a minister under Thatcher. So mostly they go anywhere. But, you know, the Gang of Four, had they stayed in Labour, maybe Labour would have won sooner, like in 1992. They might have had high office. Roy Jenkins might have become Prime Minister or David Owen. And actually, then Lord Jenkins, he was commissioned to write this Jenkins Commission about electoral reform under Tony Blair. He died in 2003. I heard him speak about a year and a half before he died. I'm very glad I got to hear him speak in the Oxford Union, of which he was president just before the Second World War. But going on, George Galloway, the Labour MP for Glasgow Hill Head, he's the one who unseated Roy Jenkins. Founder of the Respect Party, was expelled from Labour after inciting the army to mutiny. He was an independent for a while. You know, was elected for Bradford North and elected for Bow, Bethnal Green Bow in 2005. Eventually, the Respect Party died a death. He set up the Workers' Party of Britain, has got nowhere, got close to a couple of seats, and may well unseat the ogress of Yardley, Jess Phillips, next time, or may, and is that bloke come in Ilford South, where's Streeting? Chukwu Umunna, Labour. I thought he was going to be the first black prime minister, or mixed race, to be more accurate. And he and other Euro fanatics founded that, snappily titled the Independent West Group, Westminster Group for Change. They then truncated it to Change UK. He stood as a Liberal Democrat and lost his seat. So those who change party tend not to end well. Anna Soubry, another Conservative Euro fanatic, even though she'd voted for Brexit, then changed her mind over that. So she was out, absolutely detested, seen as a Nazi, that she absolutely is, an evil, evil bitch, absolute mass murderess. And she was then stood as a Liberal Democrat, lost as well. And so did the others. So all about nine of them in that Independent Westminster Group from Change, some Labour, some Conservative, most stood as Liberal Democrats, none of them won. And Luciana Berger, who left Labour saying it was anti-Semitic, went to the Liberal Democrats. I think she's back in Labour now. But so look at Douglas Carswell, was a Conservative, the first one to change to the United Kingdom Independence Party. And then he won his seat as a by-election, which he forced honourable for him to do that. And he won at the general election and he lost the next time. But then he had a very bad falling out with Nigel Farage. Famously, they disagreed on HIV, that those who are HIV positive should be allowed to immigrate to the United Kingdom. Farage said not. And actually, HIV is like living with it rather than dying of it, is less terrible than it once was. So maybe he's right, as medicine has advanced. But the other bloke, I can't remember his name, he's half Irish. His grandfather was a Donegal TD for Fianna Fáil. And was he Carswell's mate at Oxford as well? And then he won his by-election but lost in the general election. He's out of politics. Christian Wakeford left the Conservatives in disgust over Boris Johnson's lockdown lies, became a Labour MP, was re-elected for Bury South last year under Labour's banner, but probably never rise to high office. Sean Woodward was a Conservative who changed his mind. And then rather than sit for Witney, his former constituency, that's where Cameron won as a result, he went to St. Helens South, one of the safest Labour seats in the country, but suffered the biggest adverse swing again for a Labour candidate of anyone in the country, about 10% swing against in 2001, an election the Labour won handily. And I told him this in the bookshop Politicos. And he was kind of quite flat affect, rather uncharismatic character. And then he I think he even got a cabinet position under Blair. And he had been in favour of allowing people freedom to hunt with hounds, that then changed was against. And I said, why did you change your mind? He said, because of reading the Burns report. The Burns report didn't even recommend banning hunting with hounds and so on. So this is what tends to happen, those who change parties. If they remain MPs at all, they tend not to rise high. I suspect the same with Jenrick. But some of the early day Labour politicians, cabinet ministers, had been Liberal MPs, like, Wedgwood Benn, like Philip Snowden, like others will, like Sir Stafford Cripps and so on, like Leslie Horbelisha. Anyway, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.